my last full year as a real estate agent, just to give you an idea, with three other agents, I sold almost 500 homes. We sold 497 houses.
What?
It took me 7 years to sell my first house over $1 million. About 4.5 years ago, I sold the most expensive home ever in Utah. I put in like 20 minutes of work and sold a home for $32.5 million. You can do the math. It's a 3% commission. I made almost seven figures in one day.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Money Mondays. We have a dear friend here as a special guest. When you're listening to this podcast, it is coming out on Monday, April 1st. This gentleman's book is coming out tomorrow, April 2nd. So we're going to get into that. But first, I'm here with my co-host, the real Tarzan. Tarzan has been traveling all over the planet. By the time this episode comes out, because we're doing it 30 days in advance, which we normally don't do, but we had to time it perfectly because Jimmy Rex travels so much, Tarzan travels so much, and we're here. Wait, did I just... Oh, no. I just told you guys who the guest is. All right, this guy sold thousands of units of real estate. He throws an event every 4th of July with like 5 or 10,000 people show up. He just pays for the whole damn thing. He throws an Easter egg thing where he drops freaking Easter eggs out of the helicopters. I mean, his intro is going to take me too long. Please give a warm round of applause to Mr. Jimmy Rex.
Woo! Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, so Tarzan has been getting, like I keep telling you guys, over 200 million views a month, except sometimes he's now getting 200 million views in a 5 to 7 day window because his content is just getting better and better and better, and he's hitting what's called critical mass. Critical mass means tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands and sometimes millions of people are sharing content for you. A lot of you guys listening, as you start to hit 10,000 followers, 50,000 followers, 100,000 followers, etc., you're going to hit critical mass points where your content, if you stay consistent with it, is going to get shared by the people that are following you. So consistency is key. We're going to get into that with Tarzan shortly. But as you guys know, the podcast is going to be 40 minutes long. We cover three main topics: how to make money, how to invest money, how to give it away to charity. Jimmy, who's a very dear friend of mine, does all three of those categories extremely well. So please listen intently. This is one of those type of episodes you're going to want to share with your friends. I can already see the future, the type of answers that are going to come out of Jimmy Rex, because I've asked him these questions. I've watched him speak on stages for years and years and years. So let's dive right into it. Jimmy, give him the quick 2-minute bio so we can get straight to the money.
Well, appreciate it, Dan. You know, it's interesting. You never know how people are going to introduce you. It's funny that you use the events, because that's like the favorite thing that I get to do, right? Just and long story short, I had a real estate career for almost 20 years where I, you know, was one of the top agents in the Western United States, sold several thousand homes, like you said. Also had the chance to invest in, you know, hundreds of homes myself. But about 2.5 years ago, I had a couple investments pay off, changed the game for me a little bit. And I turned that over to my partner and went full time. I now run a men's coaching group called We Are the They, and help men basically connect and form community and find a place where they can be vulnerable, authentic, and in integrity. And so that's what I get to do now. And we go do crazy adventures all over the world. Took 70 guys to run with the bulls in Spain last year. Took a bunch of people to swim with tiger sharks in at Tiger Beach 2 years ago. This year, we're a bunch of us going to Victoria Falls next month to go, and we're gonna go to Kruger Park, and you know, so I'm a fellow animal lover, obviously. But anyway, so it's just really cool to get to do a lot of really cool, fun things, and in that, there's a lot of opportunities to give back and just make amazing connections with guys like you.
So, why is it important for people that are listening to either start a mastermind, join a mastermind, have a group dinner with their friends or coworkers or people in their niche like once a month and get people together? Why should people talk to other people in their category or in their niche?
I honestly believe the best gift you can give another human is to introduce them to other great people, because the accumulator, like my influence can only go so far, but if I can introduce you to the right people who then end up doing cool things together, then it's infinite, you know, infinite the amount of influence that you truly can have. Yeah. And so for me, when I was very young in real estate, my first full year, I had this coach named Mike Ferry. He's the GOAT in real estate agent coaching. And he did this event called the Top Producers, where you had to sell 75 or more homes a year to even be a part of it. And so I sold 98 homes my first real full year in real estate with one assistant. And in Utah, everybody was like, who is this guy? I was on one of the finalists for Salesperson of the Year on the Salt Lake Board of Realtors. And I started thinking I was a pretty big deal. I'm 25 years old, you know. And then I went to this event, and the guy to my right ended up becoming the CEO of Keller Williams, Chris Heller. The guy to my left sold 900 homes that year in Dallas. I'm like, all of a sudden, so I had the opportunity at that age to soak. And by the way, when you're going to people from other markets and things, they're giving you all this, they're giving you the real stuff. Mm-hmm. So I just soaked up information from all these different people, and then I just took it back and implemented it. And next thing you knew, you know, my last full year as a real estate agent, just to give you an idea, with three other agents, I sold almost 500 homes. We sold 497 houses.
What?
And so, you know, I had the chance, you know, it took me, you'll appreciate this, it took me 7 years to sell my first house over $1 million. Like in Utah, my average price point in 2008, I never forget, was $137,000. Like, but after a while, you know, obviously you change your, as you're building up your own network and everything else. About 4.5 years ago, I sold the most expensive home ever in Utah. I put in like 20 minutes of work and sold a home for $32.5 million. You can do the math. It's a 3% commission. I made almost seven figures in one day. But point of that is like, I just implemented all these things I took. And so what was cool, like what's cool about my men's group now is I was just on this journey to improve myself. Like, so I went to every mastermind, every, you know, conference, every networking event, read all these books. And in that, I just learned all these things and I met all these amazing people. And ultimately, you know, when it was time, I just share that with other people and the best parts I took away from that. And it's been really fun to be able to be on the other side of it where I have my own mastermind now. Cause I probably went to, I don't know, 50 masterminds before mm-hmm. I ever started my own. But it's really cool, man. You've been able, you know, we've been out at your ranch and, you know, we go through these experiences together and it's the most fulfilling thing ever. But ultimately you go to those things because the type of people you get to be around, going to networking, going to masterminds, it's just, it shortens that learning curve. It just, you know, it compresses time where you can learn what took somebody else 10 years. I can learn it in two.
So let's say someone out there is listening and they want to get into the real estate space. So on the topic of how to make money, how do people make money in the real estate space? Is only one way is just selling houses, or are there other ways for people to make money in the real estate category?
Yeah, no, I always say like there's no bad way to get a lead. There's no bad way to make money. Like in real estate especially, there are so many ways to do it. Next time you're in a plane, just look out the window. Everything you see is real estate, and it's a way, somebody owns all that. If you own even three of those tiny little pieces down there, you're probably doing quite well. And so the cool thing about real estate, and here's the where I think where most people get in trouble with real estate is they try to be a little bit of everything. Like when you get really smart at just one way to do it, and then you stick to that way. So for me, I was, when I first got into real estate, you know, somebody presents you a deal, it all sounds good, you're being pitched, so you invest a little bit of money here, a little bit of money there. Some of them worked, some of them didn't, to be honest. You know, the market fell apart in 07, and I didn't really know what I was doing, and I ended up getting into a couple deals that weren't so good. And what I learned in that was I needed one way to do it that was just like my way. And so I just started consuming everything I could about real estate investing. And then we just found one niche, one way. And this is what I think the best way to do real estate is, whether it's Pace Morby, and that's, you know, using his method of sub two, or if it's wholesaling, or if it's buying apartments. We were just, you know, ran into one of your friends that owns 11,000 apartment, you know, units. I think you find a way and then you become the best at doing it that way. Because it got to the point for me, so my thing was single family homes. So my personal investment portfolio, I got about 60, I have 61 single family homes that are at least 30% paid off. Some of them are all the way paid off. So that's my retirement. Here's kind of the way I look at real estate. If you buy in your 20s, $5 million worth of real estate and it cash flows, that was the key. Like it has to cash flow. And if you just do nothing else right, but you bought that, by the time you turn 45, 50, right, it's worth 10, 12, 15 million bucks and it's paid off. Mm-hmm. So I can literally squander every other dollar I make. As long as I don't sell my real estate or do anything to that, I'm set for life. So for me, I was just, and here was the thing that changed it for me. Like, I'm not very good at saving money and I love to spend it. And so for me, I started putting 30% of every check I made, and it wouldn't even go into my account. I'd put into a separate account. Hmm. And then whenever I had another 50 grand, 70 grand, whatever it was, 20% down, 25% down on a house, I'd just buy another real estate property. Hmm. And in that, I knew that if I could just do whatever I wanted with this money, as long as I kept that growing. And so now it's kind of fun because, you know, you put yourself in a position where I literally almost can't screw this up. I have so much real estate that's paid off in so many ways. Like, now I get to just, you know, focus over here and build my business the right way, not needing it to make a ton of money. I can throw a ton of money back into it because I have this little security blanket over here. And so I just tell everybody, try to get five, then 10, then $20 million worth of real estate, get it all paid off. And then you literally can screw up everything else and you're still going to be crazy wealthy for the rest of your life.
Wow.
All right, guys. So someone's listening and they hear you talk about five, 10 million. How do they buy their first one, the first 200K, 300K property? How much money do they really need to save up? Can someone making 30, 40, 50 grand a year, is it attainable for someone to be able to buy their first 200K, 300K property.
Absolutely. And I have a lot of younger guys go come to me and they say, dude, I got 50 grand, I got 100 grand. What should I invest in, right? Well, there's only two things you should do if that's the case. Or if you're just getting started, let's say you only have 15 grand. The nice thing about real estate is you can get in with 3.5% down, 3% down, 5% down. There's different things out there. So the first thing I tell people to do is buy a property that you can rent half of it. So put, what if you got 5%, let's say it's, you know, you save up, get 15, 20 grand, and then invest all the rest of your money. By the way, until you're making a couple hundred grand a year, I think you should just keep investing in yourself, going to more masterminds, hiring coaches, doing those things, because you just don't make enough money to like truly invest in a way that's going to move the needle big time. And so you've got to make more money, whether it's going to school or getting a trade or
side
whatever. Yeah. And so the rest of it though, let's say you get $20,000. Dude, you can buy a house. So my own house, I'll give you an example. I bought it 7 years ago. I bought it for, in Utah, this is a different market than like here in California, obviously. But I bought my house. It was 420. It's worth today about 850. I put down 270 grand. I put it on a 15-year loan. I rent my basement out right now. I still rent it out 7 years later for $1,500 a month. And then because it's on a 15-year loan, it pays off $900 a month on the principal. So I make almost $900 a month to live in a 5,000 square foot house that's worth $850,000, which is a very nice house in Utah. Like I make $900 a month to live in my house,
right?
And so my point is like when you're brand new, buy a duplex, buy a house, you can rent the basement, put down 5%. If you can put down more, it'll pay off most of your mortgage and then you can buy it owner occupied. So you don't have to put down that much. Then just keep doing it. You just keep buying, don't sell any of them. Keep buying another one. And you can, in 2-3 years, you can have 3 or 4 houses. And doesn't sound like much. The thing about real estate investing done right is really boring. Like there's so many sexy ways you hear about investing in real estate. And so what we do with our clients is every single client, we have a strategy session. We sit down to this day, we take 45 minutes. We just did it with Colin Sexton. He's the guard for the Jazz. We're gonna help him buy a bunch of properties. Just did it with Fred Warner, the linebacker for the Niners, but we do it for everybody. And we just say, all right, let's break down a strategy. Where do you want to be in 5 years? Where do you want to be in 10? And then we just say, okay, buy one house this year, one next year, two the year after that. And if you follow the plan, you'll be wealthy in 5-10 years. But most people, they don't do that. They don't have a strategy around real estate investing. So they just kind of buy what comes around or falls on their plate or whatever, whenever they get the itch to buy something. And so you really want to strategize it and just take that time to upfront know what you're trying to do. And I only know all this because I made all the mistakes, but that's the right way to invest in real estate.
So I'm going to tell you guys one of the few regrets I have in my life. I was a kid. I was 19 years old, and I just did $9.5 million in sales with Starter Apparel for my clothing brand. So I don't think I know it all by any means. I was learning. I was asking questions. I was in learning mode and building my company as a, you know, build a plane while you're flying type thing. I go to this guy's house. It took me 3 minutes to go up his driveway to give you an idea how big this guy's house was. I get up there to this meeting and I don't know what the meeting's for, and he doesn't know what the meeting's for either. It's just, and by the way, there's no cell phones back then. This is like, you know, 2001, I think it is. So we're like not texting, okay? There's no smartphones. So get to this guy's house, takes 3 minutes to go up the driveway, and he's in his 70s. And right out the gate, I'm unabashful. Like, I don't know if that's the right word. Unabashful? No. Is that right?
Sure.
I decide to ask him straight out, like, what do you do? Like, how does this happen? And I said, and he's like, I don't work. I was like, well, what did you do? He's like, well, I've never worked. I was like, never worked because you enjoy your work and you're saying, like, you know, like, haha. Like,
Every day was fun to go to.
Yeah. I never worked a day in my life because you love what you do. He's like, no, I've never held a job and I've never ran a company. So I'm like, I wanted to be like a jerk and be like, so did you inherit it? Did dad give this, you know, because I'm 19. I came from nothing, right? My dad was driving a taxi. My mom is supporting us on $2,000 a month for a family of four. Like, I don't understand money. I just started my company 2 years prior, a year and a half prior. He said, when I was your age, I bought one unit for $80,000. And I scrounged together, I think he said $12,000 or whatever it was, to buy this $80,000 unit. And he was like, and I spent like $4,000 in like paint, fixing this, fixing that, and then the value was now $110,000. And then I waited a little bit longer because it was my first place. I rented it out for $600 a month, and so I was making $200 a month. And then about a year later, I saved up, you know, $14,000, and I bought one very similar. And then 1 year after that, I was 21, and I did a refinance on my first one, and I took out most of the money of what I put in, and I decided to buy a bunch of units. And I bought like four houses at like $20,000-$30,000 down payment each. listening to him, and he's like, I now have 4,000 units. I've never sold a unit. Mm. The places I bought for $80,000, $100,000 are now worth $300,000, $400,000. And they all rent for $600, $1,000, $1,200, $800. He's like, I don't buy anything expensive. I just kept buying $100K, $200K, $300K, $400K type places. Rent them out for $800, $1,000, $1,200, $1,300 a month. They cash flow for me $100, $200, $300, $400 a month, and none of them can hurt me. And you guys have probably heard me say this. I always say this thing. I don't want anything that can hurt me mm-hmm. when it comes to business. It came from that guy 20-something years ago. He's like, nothing can hurt me. If a house burns down, I get insurance. Something happens, my plumbing's not going to be something that expensive because my houses are cheap. I just buy $100K, $200K, $300K, $400K houses over and over and over, and I don't sell any of them. And then after a year or two or three, I just refinance them, and I do it again, and I do it again, and I do it again. And I have 4,000 units, and I'll keep having them, and my grandparents or my grandkids will have them, and my great-great-grandkids will have them. And my only rule is they don't sell it. Why would I ever sell property?
Cash flow.
Yeah, well, that's the, and you know, when I was 21, 22, I bought a couple units that didn't cash flow, and then the market turned right, and I was upside down $600 a month, and I lost them. I sold them around 270. Well, 2 years ago, I looked them up just for fun. They're worth 600 now. But if I could have kept them, right? But so in 2010, I changed my strategy, and I said the number one thing is they have to cash flow so they can never hurt me. Mm-hmm. And I always tell my investors, look, you need to be able to live with the worst case scenario.
Yes.
And if you have cash flow, you never have to worry. That's the one rule I won't break. And people get so tempted because the market starts going nuts and they're like, it's only $400 negative a month. It's like, no. You have to cash flow no matter what. You know, when during COVID and all that, a lot of real estate was going crazy and all my friends were buying like expensive homes and things. And I said, I'm just going to buy the tried and true, the stuff I know that works. And so we found it. We studied 91 markets across the country, and we found the three markets that had the best macro and microeconomics, and we found the best cash flows. And so I bought 14 homes in Ocala, Florida. Do you know where that's at? Nobody does. There's this exactly thing north. Called the Villages. Yeah, you would know because you're always down there in the swamps and stuff. They're in Ocala, Florida. They basically service the Villages, which is the largest Republican retiree place in the country. It's a lot of just people that moved in. They also have the highest STD count. It's kind of funny. It's a bunch of old people getting after it. But anyway, so Ocala services all those people. So I have 14 houses. I bought them on average probably about $145 a house. They're all worth $270 to $300 now in 4 years. And every one of them, my mortgage is like $600 a month. You can do the math. I'm renting them for $1,400, $1,500, $1,600. Ooh, so this is my point. It's like, I don't have to ever work another day in my life because I bought all those properties. So I just wanted to know that, like, my worst case scenario, here's where people get in trouble with real estate. If you ever have to sell the property at the wrong time, you're screwed. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that can screw you over. So as long as you don't have to sell when the market's down, and that's the only thing, that's the thing that makes real estate so amazing, is when the market's down, I'm still getting $600 a month. I'm still getting $100 a month. I just don't sell at that time. And then the market always comes back, and you know, it averages itself out. And so as long as you time the market and you just don't sell when it's down, those properties, they can never hurt you.
I love it. All right, so let's talk about the investing side of life. Obviously, these are a lot of investments. We talked about how to make money. But on the investing side, outside of real estate, how do you decide when you invest into a company, a project? You've invested in restaurants, you've invested in cool venues, you've invested in businesses. Like, how do you decide outside of real estate? What are like your things to determine what you're going to invest into?
Well, I'll give you guys how I wish I'd done it. You know, it's so fascinating. I so wish there was a podcast like this when I was younger. I was learning this stuff myself. And when you're young, I had a good heart, so I just assumed other people were good too. And I can't believe how many people took advantage of me. Like, if you let people, they will take your money. Let me just say that, okay? No matter how good you think. I invested in a dental clinic in Queen Creek, Arizona one time, Dan. It never existed. Like, I didn't even know. Like, $50,000 gone. Ponzi scheme. You know what I mean? Like, I had so many things that I invested in. And, you know, the rule I tell everybody is, like, only invest in stuff you know. Because every time I've broken that rule, it's cost me. And then obviously you want to, you know, invest in the person, not in the product and all those different things. But I've learned so many lessons the wrong way, you know. And what happened is I was buying so much real estate and it kind of just got boring. I wanted to invest with my friends. I wanted to do some cool projects. Almost every one of those has gone south. I'll tell the story of Nikola because it's a fascinating one, right? The one thing that is both a negative and a positive. But long story short, I had a guy that I was friends with several years ago, 7-8 years ago, named Trevor Mitlin. And he told me about this idea he had for a truck that was like the future of trucking, and my family's in trucking, so I understood it. It was technology, it was transportation, and it was technology, transportation, and like all in one. It was like this this truck, and you guys have heard the story of Nikola. Well, long story short, I gave $500,000 of the original seed round of $2.5 million.
Whoa.
That company became worth $34 billion.
Hold on. Everyone, let's do the math really quick.
Time out.
So $500,000 of a $2.5 million original seed round, the company scales to $34 billion valuation.
Billion-dollar valuation.
Carry on.
So... I'm just going to give you guys a little, this is lessons that I learned the hard way, unfortunately. And by the way, there's an entire episode of American Greed where they told my story about all this. You can go watch it. It's very public information. So Trevor was a really close friend of mine. And he just had this way of like pressuring you when you were signing the paper. I never read any. I couldn't afford a lawyer. I gave him all my money. I just knew it was going to work, like this idea that he had. And long story short, it ends up going public during COVID, June 9th, 2020. I was actually doing the audiobook for my first book. So I'm in the studio in LA. I made $20 million that day. Dude, the stock, every time I checked my phone, I'd made $5 million. I couldn't believe it was happening. It was just this crazy moment, right? It was almost like a GameStop type of situation. Right. And the kid doing the thing, like earlier in the day, it went from like $21 to $32. I'm like, dude, I just made like a couple million bucks. And he's like knocking the window while I'm doing my audiobook. He's like, it's like, $65.
Refresh your app.
He's like, you just made like $12 million. And I'm like, so it's just the craziest day. You can't even explain this to somebody. But here's the tragedy of it all. I didn't know what I didn't know. And the guy that put in the same $500,000 that I did, there was another guy that put in $500,000. And he was able to sell at the peak or close to it, he walked away with $700 million. Okay.
What?
I did not get the same. My one question to Trevor, I had two questions. I said, are you putting in your own money? He said, yes, I'm putting $20 million of my own money. The second question I had was, do I get the shares the same price as everyone else? And he said, yes. So I assume those things were true. They weren't. I was getting the shares at about a fraction of what the other guy was. So even at its, I had all these reporters calling me, people like, you got screwed. You need to like look at this. But he was a close friend of mine. I was in his wedding. Like this dude was, we'd been to Hawaii together, went to Turks and Caicos together. Like he was a good friend. And, but I, at the peak, my shares were worth $32 million. So I'm like, I don't care. I don't have to worry about money ever again. Like he still made me $32 million. I'm not going to hold it against him. Well, then it came out, there was a bunch of fraud. The Hindenburg report comes out. I'm hunting hogs in Texas one day. Sorry, that was they're rodents.
I like pepperoni pizza, so it's all right.
Okay, cool. And I lost that day about half the money of the stock. Just collapsed that day.
So $32 million went down to $16 million?
It had already gone down from the peak to like 25, and then I think I lost $12 million that day. Yeah. So I still had about $12 million in stock, and GM had just signed a deal with them to come out with this truck. So they were like, the stock was still like holding, even though there was some fraud against Trevor and all this stuff. Well, the day before I could sell, I was locked up. Here was the other part of it I didn't know. The other guy wasn't locked up.
Oh.
I was. So if
I
would.
What do you mean locked up?
You can't sell your shares for 6 months from when we went public.
Okay.
So if I had just made sure my shares weren't locked, which I'm sure if I would have asked for it, he would have given it to me because he needed my money when I gave it to him. Right. I just didn't know what to ask
for. Especially if the other person didn't have a lockup.
Of course. Right. And his dad was the other one. He didn't have a lockup and his brother and all this stuff. Anyway. So I'm like hanging on. I'm okay. I can still deal with 12. Is pretty life changing still, you know. I'm feeling pretty good. And I mean, I was making a lot. I was making multiple seven figures as a realtor. So it wasn't like, you know, like, oh my gosh, I'm finally gonna have money. Right. But it was like, this is gonna change my life. And then the day before I could sell, GM pulls out. Oh, I lost another $7 million the last day.
Oh my God.
So the rule that I had on this is, number one, I invested, but it's my own fault, dude, because I watched him work with other people. I watched how he interacted. We'd been on a trip to Vegas once. He was completely out of integrity on some stuff the whole time. I knew who he was, if I'm being honest. And that was my own greed got in the way, my own inability to, I mean, it just, I knew the damn thing was going to work, you know?
The truck looked cool.
It was amazing. And dude, at one point, it was worth more than Ford as a company. That's insane. It's been around for 90 years.
Yeah.
So anyway, my rule with investing in stuff like that is, number one, is I will never invest in somebody unless they've already done it many, many times over now, right? Number two is they have to be an expert in that thing. And number three, they have to be trustworthy. Like all the investments that have lost me money, dude, I had another investment I did with some other stuff. And I watched the guy cheat on his wife one time, like basically watched him walk off with another woman. I still invested with that dude. And I ended up losing all that money. It's my own freaking fault, you know? Like that dude wasn't honest. And I knew that guy was capable of that. So that's, and then the other thing is, here's the tragedy of the whole thing. By the time I finally sold my stock, I still got a couple million bucks, but I would have made more money if I had put my money in Tesla, just in the stock.
Right, just holding Tesla.
And held it for the 5 years it took for Nikola to have this crazy, but here was the gift of it, dude. I went on that roller coaster like every day. I'm trying to sell real estate on the side still, right? Right. I mean, that was my day job. I'd wake up or go to bed. Every time I woke up, I'd either made or lost a million bucks with that stock. Oh, you know how hard it is to go sell homes and make an $8,000 commission when you woke up and lost $2 million or made $1 million? It was wild, man. It was a roller coaster and no one gets to go on. And the cool part was, is in that, I had about a 4 month period where I was like, okay, I'll never have to work again. I'll never have to worry about money on like a high level. And so I really got to ask myself a question, like, what do I want to do? What do I want my life to be? And the only thing I would have changed in my life then is I said, I want to do less real estate full time. I want to get into coaching and community building. And so I did that anyway. And so that's kind of the life I'm living now, is really what I wanted to do anyways. And so the cool part was, is I didn't need the money. And here's the gift in it all. If I'd have made the 30 million or the 700 million, that would have been my whole story. Nobody would ever give me credit for other things. They'd be like, oh, he made his money off that freaking fraud Nikola. Like, he got lucky. He invested in a stock that went crazy. You know, it was a GameStop situation. It's like a lot of guys make their money that way, I think, like crypto and stuff. And anyway, it would have been my whole story. And I would have lost all credibility. So the cool part is like, in the end, I didn't lose. Definitely didn't get the win I was hoping. But I got to experience that on such a level and go through all those emotions. And I was like, what a ride, you know?
Tarzan. If you got $32 million today, would you change anything with your life?
I'd probably buy like a herd of elephants.
You know what I was going to do with a million of it? This is honestly the saddest part of the whole thing.
You didn't even blink.
That's what I was thinking about the whole time. What I would do with $32 million. Buy a big plot of land, a bunch of baby elephants.
You have a big plot of river. Land.
Yes. Dude, well, I'm
across the street is what I'm talking about.
I'm a shark nerd.
I'm by the neighbors, everybody.
Okay. I'm a big shark nerd.
Yeah.
So I was going to partner with all these shark influencers. We were going to do this really cool village in Indonesia. So Madison Stewart, she has this thing where Project
From
Huey.
Maldives.
No, it's in Indonesia. I don't know exactly, but it's called Project Huey, which is like Project Shark. And she basically saves sharks. Instead of hunting them, she takes all these shark fishermen and they turn it into tourism.
Yeah.
So I was going to pump a few million into that. Like, I was like going to be able to save all these sharks.
Yes.
And that was the thing I was legit the most sad about, that I couldn't do that project. That was the, so like, it's not that far off.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's probably why we like get along.
Exactly.
I just want to be clear, you do have a plot of land right here.
I was talking about here. For
You're
sure.
You're not leaving me, right?
No, of course not.
Depends on me. It's $32 million
in a herd of elephants. And getting our neighbors.
So, wild jungle, if you guys want to come visit. We're not open to the public. We do private tours, especially when Tarzan's in town. It's Wild Jungle, WYLD. We sit on 26 acres. There's 209 animals. By the time you're listening to this, there's probably more because they're freaking making babies left and right. These freaking goats and sheep and lambs. And
getting it in.
Yeah, as animals do.
Yeah, seriously. You can visit us here. We are at some point, our life goals is to buy across the street. There's 144 acres right across the street. That's vacant land. And on our right, 64 acres. So we're just putting out there into the ether that one day we are going to buy our neighbors on the side and across the street. Maybe even the veterinarian next door who's probably listening to us right this second because he listens to the podcast.
Coming for you, Paul.
One day. But we'll buy 51%. You can stay there. We just want to add more animals to be veterinary things for more animals. Because he focused on equestrian. We have a lot of different animals here. Tarzan, if you got $32 million and you bought a bunch of elephants, what do you do with the other $31.5 million?
Keep buying more neighbors' houses. I'm probably going to overpay for the next neighbors next door and the next neighbors next door. If someone's selling a house for $5 million and I have a herd of elephants, I will give you an extra $3 million to get the heck out faster. I'll leave yesterday.
Jimmy Rex. Sometimes, is it okay to overpay for a piece of real estate?
Depends. If it's for your own pleasure, yes. If it's because you want the land and it's like your dream to have elephants on it, then sure. But like I always tell everybody, look, you're the one that's going to live there. If it's your own house, you're the one's going to be there. So if it's exactly what you want and you're not going to be selling for 5 or 7 years, sure, buy it. But otherwise, if it's for investing, no. Like, you never should overpay for something. Unless you just know that the potential upside, you know something other people don't, you know. But otherwise, no. I mean, you shouldn't.
Last core topic is charity. So we talk about how to make money, how to invest money, how to give it away to charity. Jimmy Rex, let's first talk about your events, because those are kind of like charity, because you spend a lot of freaking money throwing these 10,000 person, you know, fireworks things and thousands of kids with helicopters of freaking Easter eggs flying all over the place. Like, walk us through why you spend your own money to throw these events for people in your community in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, I mean, it started out, you know, there's a lot of ways that you can sell houses as a real estate agent and get to know people, network, market, all those kind of things. And I just said, I'm just going to spoil everyone that I can. I'm just going to, it's really hard not to like somebody that keeps making your life better, you know? And it's the old Gary Vee, you know, jab, jab, right hook. Like, I'm just going to give. And eventually people are going to want to use me for real estate. But I also, there's this principle in doing things like this, where people getting screwed up. And it's why I think you and I, Dan, have worked so well together in so many things, is you have to give expecting nothing in return. And so few people can truly do it. I remember you sent me a text one time, a compliment. You said you're one of the few guys that just shows up and really overdoes it and does what he says he's going to do. Like, you don't need anything in return, like, because that's just the way of being. And when you do, you're that way, you're that way. And so when you do that, doors will just blow open for you. And so, like, I had people try to quantify it. You know, they wanted to partner with me on my events, and they'll be like, hey, all right, how many leads can I get? I'm like, I have no idea. I don't get leads at my events. All I know is that if I throw a party for the community once a month, we'll rent out the water park in town. I, you know, the Easter egg hunt where, dude, and honestly, it's kind of like, as a kid, I'm an adult kid. Like, mm-hmm. Let's just be honest.
We all are.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we were rolling in the mud with Bedros' thing yesterday, and I was just laughing. I'm like, this is what a kid would love. Like, are you kidding me? I used to, like, get in trouble for doing this. And anyway, I just said, I'll just be the person I needed when I was a kid, you know, like, be the hero of your own story. Like, who, like, there's so many people that show up to my events. There's little kids that every single holiday in their entire lives, they've been able to be entertained because I've thrown these amazing events for them. And think about, as you're a kid, dude, and you're like watching Easter egg, 10,000 Easter eggs come out of a helicopter. You're getting pelted. It's so funny. The kids are getting drilled. They're full of candy. But like, you're never going to forget freaking that time an Easter egg hit you in the face and you had a bunch of jelly beans after. You know what I mean? Like, that's a lifetime memory. And so for me, I just get lit up knowing, like, I've had little kids run up to me at these parties, like, several times. They're like, I just want to be you when I'm older. Like, you know how cool that feels? Like, yeah, it's just fun. And so anyway, honestly, I started my career selling for sale by owners and calling for 3-4 hours a day. And I just converted it to just giving to the community. And so, you know, the money would just always come in, the deals would come in. But, you know, even since I'm not doing real estate full time, I'm like, I just love doing this. It's just a fun way to give back to the community. And so ultimately, those events are just my way of trying to honestly be the kid that the guy I wish I had when I was little.
All right. I'm going to ask a very intense question. Jimmy Rex, you've spent many, many, many times going to different countries to help rescue children from sex trafficking. Can you talk us through, without talking about the companies, talk us through the actual experience of going out there? I think you've done it 10 or 15 times now, where you have to change your look and style and feel and, like, go out there and face the devil, and you know.
Yeah, yeah. I've been on 13 ops. I haven't done it for a couple of years now that I'm more public. I don't do it anymore. But, you know, there's these moments in life where, you know, and the name of my company is We Are the They. And I'll explain that because it kind of tells why. Like, the first time I heard about this, you know, this company that was, this charity that was going in and rescuing kids being sex trafficked, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I need to be a part of this. Like, I can help here. And I honestly asked myself the question right then. I didn't have the whole motto of We Are the They yet, but I said, if I can't go do this, who can? I have money, I have influence, I have time. If I die, no one will be that devastated. I don't have kids or a wife. Like, you know, it's like a few people be sad, but, like, ultimately nobody's dependent on me. And so I just, like, found a way to be a part of this. And I'll never forget, I went on that first op, you know, and you have this rescue, and it's just life-changing. Like, when I was going through my hardest time in real estate, 2008, 2009, I was just paying off debt and paying off bills. And I had a quote on my wall, Dan. It said, show up today for your future self. You never know who's going to need you. Because I had to motivate myself with something bigger than the moment, because the moment sucked. And sometimes when the moment sucks, you just, so I always said, like, and on my list of goals, one of them was save someone's life one day. And we had the chance to go do this. And it was just life-changing. And, you know, after doing multiple ops, we had one that was really dangerous. These guys were professionals. They were very evil dudes. They had a perimeter set, the whole thing. And I'll never forget, after we did the takedown, we did the rescue. And the coolest part of the takedowns, by the way, is, like, the rescue was great, but we never really got to see it. So it's just different when you don't see the kids getting saved, because they would arrest us as well as the traffickers. Right. And so they would take us to the airport and take the traffickers, obviously, to prison. But we saw these traffickers. One of them was a lady. She was a middle school teacher, and she would use her position at school. And she'd lure these girls, say, "Hey, I'll give you $20 if you come to the, you know, 200 pesos, whatever. If you come to this party," next thing they know, they're being raped. And then they'd tell them, "If you say anything, we'll tell your parents, blah, blah, blah." So these kids are like trafficked from their homes a lot of times. That's how it works, and one of the ways it works. Anyway, we took her down, and I always think about how many hundreds and hundreds of kids we might have helped not get put into that situation because of that one rescue. But on the way back from the airport one time, I was, you know, this one mission in particular was we took down some really bad dudes. And I'm telling my girlfriend about it in the car in my truck. And she pulls over and she looks at me and she goes, "Hey, I don't want you to do this anymore." I was like, "What are you talking about? You don't just hear what I said?" And she's right. Like, "Oh, I know, but it's like, it's super dangerous. It's a bad environment." I was like, "I know, but like, this is going to be like part of my life's mission now." And she goes, "I know, but like, why can't they just do it?" And without even thinking, I go, "There is no they. We are the they." And when I said that, I was like, "Oh my gosh." It sent shivers down my whole body. And I was like, "Oh my gosh." I was like, "That's my new, look, I still get shivers." So I put it on my arm as a tattoo. And that became my life motto. And it's like, you know, we're always like, "Ah, they need to do something about this." But like, the truth is like, you have to do it. Like, if you see a problem in the world, like, that's with you guys, you're rescuing animals, doing all these things. It's like, no, you're doing it. Like, no one else is coming. Like, if you see an issue, go do it, be the difference. And so that just became my life motto. And it's created what it's turned out to be a really fun way to live.
So Tarzan, similar intense question. Poachers, whenever I ask you this, anything about it, you get the serious face on. Talk to us about why poaching is so damaging to our society.
Man, it's hard to talk about, and because I've seen it a lot when traveling, deep Africa, for example, just seeing rhinos with their faces cut open, elephants, you know, all shot up on the ground. It's a hard thing to see, you know, and it enrages me because. You know, you guys ask me, what's the first thing you get? You know, it's like a herd of elephants. I have a really soft spot for animals, you know. Man, and know that there's people out there that just will kill them for no reason other than keratin, their tusk. Yeah. It breaks my heart, you know. And it gives me a bad taste in my mouth for humans, you know. And it's not right because not all humans are poachers, you know. It's just those few bad apples out the bunch. And when you start doing real research and figuring out why people are actually hurting rhinos and giraffes and elephants and lions, you know, it's the people that live around these reserves that don't have anything, you know. It's like, hey, give this guy a location of a giraffe that's albino giraffe that's like two in the world, and this guy hasn't fed his family in months, you know. He knows he lives on the edge of his reserve, and some random rich guy comes up and says, "Hey, I'll give you $2,000, which will feed his whole family for the rest of the year." Yeah, for sure. You know, let alone $20,000. That animal's worth whatever you want on the black market, you know. So these guys have no remorse because they're trying to feed their family. The other guy's trying to make a quick buck because he's making 10 times the amount on the back end. And it's a sad thing to see, you know. Man, I know a few guys, not going to drop their names, that go out and hunt these bad guys, you know.
Hunt the poachers,
yeah. You know. And many times I've helped them out, given some dough. Me and another mutual friend of ours, put together a campaign and raised like almost $1 million for them in a week. And I mean, they got drones and cars and, you know, just different things that help them combat these problems, you know. And it's good to reverse, I call it man putting his hand in nature. It's good to help reverse that sometimes, you know. If I wasn't Tarzan living on social media and doing all those things, I'd probably live out there in the bush hunting bad guys. Be my thing, you know.
Well, what's so cool about what you do, if you don't mind if I chime in, is, you know, my life forever changed in an ocean when I was open water diving and a tiger shark came in from the deep blue. And it wasn't fear, it wasn't anything but pure love for this animal. We hadn't entered, there was no cage, no wall between us. It was an energetic exchange, and I forever changed my entire life towards animals, the ocean, and the earth. And getting out there and seeing these animals. I've been to Africa multiple times. I've done all these things because when you see an elephant in the wild and then you research about them, you're like, oh my gosh, they help raise each other's babies. Yeah, like, this is crazy. Yeah. Like, you can't help but want to help and protect. And so what you do, which is so cool, the awareness you guys bring is like, you have so many people come and experience these animals just even here at the ranch where you know, when you care about something, you actually do something about it. And so just being able to change people's minds towards those things makes a giant difference for those animals.
Yeah, man. Having a platform with animals, I got to be the voice for the voiceless. The animals can't say, hey, I'm getting wiped out. They can't say, hey, my brother and sister just got killed a few weeks ago. You know, they don't have that. They don't have a voice to say that. So someone's got to be the they. You know, there's people out there that do it. I'm one of them. You know, when I was traveling once out in deep Africa, they actually caught a poacher and they did some really bad things to the guy in front of me. And I had no remorse for it. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't kill him, but he ended up getting arrested and he ended up giving out a bunch of locations out to where other men were with, you know, guns and ivory and, you know, all types of stuff. And it ended up being like an 8-man bust. But the problem is the guy's got like 13 months in jail. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're going to make hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions of dollars, do some small time, and they're gonna get out and go back and do the same thing, you know? So It sucks, man. It's a bad revolving door, but there's people out there fighting that fight, you know? And I think with the right time, the right people, the right money, you can turn the tables, yeah. You know?
That's awesome.
Last question, Jimmy Rex. It is April 1st, right this second, and tomorrow on April 2nd, your book comes out. What's the title? What's it about? Where can people get it? Tell us everything.
Yeah, no, thanks for mentioning that. So it's called B1. It comes from the quote from Marcus Aurelius, which is, waste no more time arguing about what a good man should be, B1. And the subtitle is, How to Be a Healthy Human in Toxic Times. And super proud of it. It's basically kind of the program I put my men through. It's just, really, we live in really interesting times. It's really hard to navigate for men and for women, everybody, to kind of, what is the right, how are some of these things we can and shouldn't do or should do, or all these different things. And Ed Milet did the foreword for my book, and you know, he said the other day, he said, it's rare that a book will come by at its right time in the right place, and men need this book to help navigate the world we're in. So that's the best way I can explain it.
Wow.
Where can people get it?
It'll be on, it's on Barnes & Noble. It's on now. You can pre-buy it until tomorrow. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the above, and yeah.
All right, guys, you were listening to Mr. Jimmy Rex on Instagram. That's Mr. Jimmy Rex on Instagram. He also has a great podcast, and he's done, I think, 400 or 500 episodes of that podcast because he started 5 years before we did here. Obviously, The Real Tarzan, follow him along on social media. And it's really important, guys, have these discussions with your friends, with your family, with your followers, with your coworkers about money. We all grew up thinking it's rude to talk about money, and us here inside this RV motorhome think it's rude to not talk about it. You've got to learn about finances, investing, accounting, taxes, all the things that are real life situations. There's nothing wrong with talking about reality. You're not flexing on people. Like, you're talking about it because you need to understand your salary, commissions, loans, financing. There's so many things that are involved around money, which is a reality for you, and why so many millions of people are in debt because they just don't understand money. We need to have these discussions. So thank you for sharing the podcast. We've been number one in the entrepreneur category for 43 out of the 54 weeks since we started. That's because of you guys sharing the podcast, sharing clips. I'm sure there's a lot of fun clips that'll be shared of Mr. Jimmy Rex here. So I appreciate you guys. And remember what Jimmy said. There is no they. We are the they. We'll see you guys next Monday.